Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
You know, as we talk about South America and we look at what kind of crop they had, Argentina had a little bit of a struggle last year. Now, all of a sudden, we had a huge crop out of Brazil. Great planting, and things looked really good out of Brazil. And that's part of the reason what kind of kept our prices and started seeing us decline here. And we lost some of these export sales because they've been made up in South America.
Steve Georgie with Allendale.
But Argentina, they're planting right now. So they're putting corn in the ground. This is something that we need to pay attention to, is this possibility of El Nino. And so El Nino is strongly associated with above or near normal. Let's just go with normal yields for Argentina.
This is Agriculture Today.
Bottom line is, we cannot sustain adequate levels of Ukraine assistance with transfer authority only. And the delay to additional funding would be perceived by Ukraine as a sign of wavering U.S. support and likely as a betrayal of our previous commitments.
Representative Rosa DeLauro is a Democrat from Connecticut and a former member of the House Ag Committee.
The United States betraying our commitments to Ukraine is essentially the bottom line on this continuing resolution.
The debate on Saturday in the House for a continuing resolution. Florida's Mario Diaz-Balart.
I just would like to remind everybody that before we can fund anything else, Ukraine, we have to start by funding the government of the United States of America.
DeLauro frustrated that Democrats didn't have much opportunity to read the legislation.
But they should know which members are willing to give them up in their own self-interest for a pay raise. It is despicable. You are about to shut the government down. But hours before you do so, you give yourself
a
pay raise.
Will suspend.
It's pathetic.
Will suspend.
Yes.
The chair will remind the members in this chamber, as a matter of decorum, direct your comments to the chair.
Will do.
And heed the gavel.
Austin Scott is a representative from Georgia and a member of the House Ag Committee.
I thought I might read the American citizens the 27th Amendment to the Constitution. No law varying the compensation for the services of the senators and representatives shall take effect until an election of representatives shall have intervened. Now, if you're watching this, I'm sorry that you don't have something better to do on a Saturday, but you need to know who's telling you the truth and who's not telling you the truth. Recently, you heard my colleague from Connecticut tell you that the Republican bill has a pay raise for members of Congress. It's simply not true. And if it did, it would be unconstitutional. And if the Senate bill changes the compensation for members of Congress, then it too is unconstitutional. Again, the 27th Amendment, word for word, no law varying the compensation for the services of the senators and representatives shall take effect until an election of representatives shall have intervened. They are simply grasping at straws. They have intended to shut down the government from the start. With regard to Ukraine funding, I'm on the Armed Services Committee. I also happen to be on the Intelligence Committee, and I support the mission in Ukraine. But it is not a U.S.-led mission. It is a mission that the United States is participating in, and this continuing resolution will not do anything to hinder what the United States is doing with regard to Ukraine. We need to vote for this continuing resolution. We need to keep the United States government open. We need to keep the DOD funded and our soldiers funded, and disregard totally what you're hearing from the other side. They are grasping at straws, making excuses, and telling flat-out lies about member compensation as an excuse to vote against this piece of legislation. Let's keep the government open. Vote for this bill.
But after the debate ended and the votes were counted,
on this vote, the yeas are 335, the nays are 91. Two-thirds being in the affirmative, the rules are suspended. The bill is passed, and without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid on the table.
And this is Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Starting the conversation is probably the most difficult part in this process when we talk about succession planning, because transition means change.
It's Brendan Dirkschneider, President, Insurance Design Management in Omaha, on starting the conversation.
And we're all human, and creatures of habit. And transition means change, and none of us like change. Change can be scary for us. It means changing the course of that family farm or ranch operation. It may be that everyone kind of has to evaluate a number of factors about themselves. You know, what's their perception of control? What's their attitude regarding change? What's their core values? You know, what are their work habits or lack thereof to develop those work habits? You know, what's your definition of legacy? What's legacy mean to you? Are there emotional or physical health limitations to some of our family members? And what's the feelings to all of the stakeholders and people that have an investment? And maybe it's an emotional investment in that family farm or ranch. So one of the things that I tell most of our family members is give your children or grandchildren a perspective. And the best way to give them a perspective is really sharing that family history, helping them understand the timeline and the sacrifices that future generations had to make to get to the point of where you're at. And one of the best ways I've seen this accomplished is really even taking a roll of butcher block paper, rolling it across the kitchen table and saying, okay, you know what? When was this farm or ranch homesteaded? When did our family homestead this operation? And what were some of the important timeline events that the farm or ranch operation had to witness? You know, when were we able to add acres? When did we lose acres? When was there a premature death? When did you have a sibling out? How did that ownership structure evolve? And along the way in those timelines, if you could do something over, what would you do over and why? It really gives that younger generation a better understanding and appreciation of, again, those risks and sacrifices the previous generations made. And it allows those current members to assess and discuss where they're at today. Are they ready to make some of those same sacrifices to continue this legacy or this family farm or ranch operation? And it allows all family members, whether they're active or inactive, to discuss what they would like to see in the future. So really sharing that family history really opens up the opportunity to have good discussion on what is your definition of success and what would you like to see that family farm or ranch become. And I will say the importance of the communication is probably the biggest aspect with regards to succession planning. Having the willingness to have these conversations with your family members is the most likely scenario to have a succession plan succeed. And this important communication comes in different ways. The three largest factors that we see that's significant with family business longevity are frequent family meetings. And those family meetings should involve all stakeholders, the ones that own the assets, the ones that are managers or caretakers of the assets, and the ones that have that emotional tie. There should be strategic annual planning meetings, so every one of the family members understands the directions of what the operation is trying to accomplish. And I know there is a common misconception that meetings are a waste of time. I get it. There's always something that needs to be done, whether it's a livestock operation or a row crop operation. There's never enough hours in the day, and meetings could be viewed as a waste of time. But, you know, if we can build them up not to be a failed experience, but a positive experience, they really do facilitate communication. They help coordinate workflow. They make sure that you can improve decision making between family members, but it also helps those family members understand the why.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
This is a pivotal moment for American agriculture.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack.
I'm going to take you back, then I'm going to take you forward in my comments today. I say it's a pivotal moment. We've had a number of pivotal moments in agriculture. If you think about in 1862, in the midst of a civil war, the President of the United States decided there was a need for the country to have a Department of Agriculture, a need for us to have research being done so that our farmers and those who lived in rural communities could prosper. He understood and appreciated that a democracy required a food-secure nation. He understood the importance of research and making sure that farmers got information and knowledge. And so in addition to starting the department, he also had the vision of establishing our land-grant university system and the extension opportunities that created. Fast forward another 60, 70 years after the Civil War, we were in the midst of the Dust Bowl and the Depression. The Secretary of Agriculture, Henry Wallace, understood and appreciated the importance of investing in conservation, understood the need for farmers to have stable income, and so he established a supply management system that was in place for about 60 or 70 years following the Dust Bowl and Depression. Then Secretary Butts came along in the early 1970s and understood and appreciated that the world was going to need more food production. The population was going to grow. He wanted American agriculture to be at the front and center of an international effort to meet the food needs of a growing world population. And so we got rid of the supply management system of the New Deal. We focused on production. As he famously said, he wanted farmers to plan fence row to fence row. And farmers did. And the agricultural industry responded with extraordinary innovation and technology. In my lifetime, the productivity of American farmers has improved by 17 times. It's truly a remarkable story of innovation. So it makes sense that the topic of this particular outlook forum would be Seeds of Growth through Innovation, a continuation of that tradition. Our productivity was unmatched. We became a food secure nation. We began to export to the rest of the world. And today, agriculture depends in a significant amount on those exports. And certainly appreciate the fact that the last couple of years we have set records in terms of exports. And again, expect another, as I think Seth probably indicated, a strong year for exports. But there was a consequence to that focus on productivity. The consequence was that it became more expensive to put a crop in the ground. And as farmers recognized that and appreciated that, they began the process of understanding that they had to spread that cost over a larger and larger base. And so we began to see farm sizes increase, which meant that we needed fewer farmers. And that impacted not just agriculture, but it impacted those small towns that depended on farmer population, customers for those small businesses in the downtown area, in the central business district. Children going to school. A number of folks could support a hospital and a clinic. And we saw the impact and effect of fewer and fewer farmers on rural communities. And we also saw, as we focused on productivity and innovation, we also saw that we were beginning to lose some of the most precious resources we have in this country, which is our topsoil.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack. And this is Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Historically, the seasonals show that August and September is the low for the Chicago wheat market, and it does typically rally.
Nate Breisch is with Allendale as part of the Ag Leader Fall Conference looking at wheat.
40-year average is this blue line, the 15-year average is this red line, and the pink line is the 5-year average. So there is a bullish argument here. Seasonally, we run higher. So, you know, we hit that low. It's been holding it for some time, and maybe we are due for a run higher. But as I mentioned earlier, we need to see some other story come in and confirm that to make that the demand come in. Because while we have one side of the bullish story, tight supplies, we don't have the other half, which we need to have, which is demand. We need to see demand pace pick up here over the next few months. So just in short, I wanted to go over quickly some price projections. And if you look at the chart on the left, that is a weekly chart, and that does show, you know, we are holding this low from May, but at the same time, you know, that is a 3-year low. If you look on the chart on the right, that's a monthly chart. We haven't been down here since the end of 20. And here we are at the end of 23, testing those, and it doesn't look too hot. And like I've mentioned many times, there's just no demand. I think that's more of what we're seeing, in this market than anything else. We started off this year at 786. Since then, we have sold it down to 589. That is where we closed today, Tuesday, the 26th. And that is a 25% sell-off. So unless you've been able to make your cash sales back in July when we had that spike up and we had that fear of potentially not getting a Black Sea grain deal that was at the time already overplayed, you're kind of sitting in a rock and a hard place. So if you made those sales, great. If you bought some puts, fantastic. You know, at least you're making some of that back on the board. That's the whole idea behind it. But at the same time, a lot of people out there haven't sold their grain. So we need to be looking out and seeing what we can do in the future. So looking out for next year, I mean, it might be worth buying some $7 calls. If you sold that cash and you're looking to get back in, you know, we're holding 3-year lows. It might be the time to look at buying some calls. I personally, we need to see some story come in here and ignite this, but right now that's what we need. So look out, you know, maybe a $7 call in May for 30 cents, try to pick it up for 20 cents. It's plenty of time. Gets you through the winter, gets you through, the first couple weeks of the year, or first couple months of the year. And I think that might be something to look into. If you still have a lot of cash on hand, I always will tell my farmers, if you have a profit, make those cash sales. That's the best way to do it. But if you didn't, you know, give yourself a little bit of time. If you want to wait for that rally, if you think that story is going to come in, spend 20 cents on some January $6 puts. That gets you to the end of the year. And I think that would be a great way to protect yourself, get yourself a 580 break-even price if it does continue to slide. Now that's looking at the March contract, but still, I think that is a great market to be looking at. Even further out, if you're looking at protecting what's going in the ground right now, I think that you still should be buying puts. And then if we see that rally going back to those seasonals, if we see that rally come in at the beginning of the year, you know, in that May potentially to June timeframe, let's go ahead and make those. But for the right now, we need to be looking at protecting the bottom. Buy some puts here for 20 or 30 cents to protect that $6 range. If you want to re-own and be part of that party, if it does come back in, if we do see some demand to really come into this market, spend some money on those calls. You know, since the last market meeting we had, you know, we were trading right around $7. So, I mean, you've sold off, you're below $6. If you can catch a dollar upswing, I don't think that's too far out of the question, but we need to see a lot of things come into fruition before that happens.
You can learn more online at Allendale-INC.com. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
And a lot of times we understand that to have those family meetings, maybe we have to proactively address the elephant in the room.
Brendan Dirkschneider, President, Insurance Design Management in Omaha, on starting the conversation.
Maybe there's been prior disruptions between family members. Maybe there's hurt feelings over something before. If we have to address those elephants in the room before those family meetings can take place, that's another important aspect, because we have to be able to cross that bridge to get to where we're at. But the biggest thing is, it's just that mutual purpose that all participants or family members must understand that the point of the conversation is to arrive at a solution so that the future of the farm or ranch can continue to future generations.
But the first and most important step is a will.
Well, while you're alive, one of the biggest things that you need to take care of from an estate planning standpoint is called a power of attorney. And that power of attorney form allows the management of assets in the event of a disability or incapacity, or maybe you're just out of the country finally on vacation. But of a power of attorney, you're going to have it both for financial and for health care. And those power of attorneys are just giving an individual the legal right to make decisions on your behalf. You know, for financial purposes, they can buy and sell inputs. They can buy and sell grain. They can buy equipment. They can write checks. For healthcare decisions, if you're disabled or incapacitated, they can make healthcare decisions for you. This is very important, because if you don't have that and it's something urgent, you actually have to go through the court process to get appointed to be somebody's power of attorney. So those power of attorney forms are very important documents to have in place while you're living. The other aspect to consider when it comes to estate planning goals while you're living is, how are we going to protect assets from long-term care costs? For many of our medium to small size operators, when we're looking at future healthcare related expenses, especially nursing home or assisted living expenses, you may have heard people say, well, I'm just going to simply give the assets away. I'll give the assets to my kids and that's it. And then I'll just go on Medicaid, not Medicare, but Medicaid. Well, what people need to realize is there's actually a 5-year look back from the date in which you apply for Medicaid. So if you think you're going to give all your assets away to try to preserve those family farm or ranch assets, it has to be done 60 months before the date in which you apply for Medicaid. If any assets were given away within that 60 months from the date you would apply for Medicaid, they can actually go back and they can capture those assets, make you liquidate those assets to pay for your care. So we talk about the pros and cons of some of those decisions, and we talk about, okay, how can we protect some of the farm assets from their future healthcare related expenses? And those are different estate planning documents. For example, maybe a life estate that may be important to some of our smaller and medium-sized farm operators to help protect those assets. But you have to do that before the events take place and while you're living. Estate planning goals at death, we need to talk about, okay, how do we make sure who gets what, how, and when after we pass away? Because once we pass away, that power of attorney is null and void. The individual that was named as your power of attorney has no legal right to represent you after you pass away. Once you pass away, we want to make sure that we're maximizing your estate by reducing expenses and avoiding delays. We're going to try to, at all costs, to make sure we're avoiding family disputes and make sure your estate planning documents distribute assets based on what your intentions as a patriarch and matriarch of that farm family. And then we're also going to try to minimize the federal estate tax if your operation should be subject to those. And then first and foremost, we need to make sure that we're providing enough liquidity that the actions that you take within your estate planning documents can actually be carried through without forcing the operation to go into significant debt.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Fast forward to the recent time.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack speaking earlier this year at the annual Ag Outlook Forum.
A set of challenges that agriculture faced. First, COVID and the impact it had on our overall economy. Then a year ago, Russia, without justification, unprovoked, invaded Ukraine and roiled the supply chain, causing increased input costs for farmers. And of course, we deal on a constant basis with the challenge of climate, mega droughts, wildfires, fierce storms. What we learned from this experience of these challenges was that American agriculture was extraordinarily efficient and our food system was amazingly efficient, but it wasn't as resilient as we needed to be. We rebounded from all of these conflicts and challenges. And over the last 2 years, we've enjoyed record farm income. And I think Seth's report today suggests that maybe we won't set a record this year, but we'll have income that is better than the average, better than the historical average. In fact, the last couple of years have beat the historical average by as much as 50%. Record income. And as I've said to many audiences, usually a Secretary of Agriculture, after saying that, would leave the stage, you all would applaud, and that would be the end of my comments. But here's the reality. The question is, who benefited from that record? We know that nearly 50% of our farmers over the course of the last several years, according to ERS, have had negative farm income. They didn't make money from their farming operation. We know that nearly another 40% of our farmers made money, but the majority of what they made for their family didn't come from farming. It came from off-farm income. So while we had record income, those large commercial-sized operations did very, very well. And they should, because they've invested a lot of time and energy in producing an extraordinary crop. But the other 90% or so struggled. So that's why I think we're at a pivotal moment. I think we have to ask ourselves a serious question about whether we want a system that continues to see further consolidation and the impact that that has on farmers and on rural communities, or whether we're innovative enough to figure out a new way, a different way, an expanded opportunity, so that when we have record income, it's shared not by a few, but by many and most. President Lincoln said this in the midst of another time of crisis and challenge. He said, "The dogmas of the quiet past are inadequate to the stormy present. The occasion is piled high with difficulty, and we must rise with the occasion. As our case is new, so we must think anew and act anew." I think this quote summarizes where we are as we look at this outlook for American agriculture and for the country. President Biden understands and appreciates that the strength of this great country is in its middle class. And he is committed to rebuilding that middle class, as he likes to say, from the bottom up and the middle out. So fortunately for us, in this pivotal moment, we have tools that we haven't had before. Or we have tools that we are using in different ways. The Commodity Credit Corporation, the American Rescue Plan, the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, the Inflation Reduction Act, is going to allow us to rise to the occasion, to think anew.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Here we are moving into the next 3 months, October, November, December. Where are we?
Steve Georgi is president of Allendale.
And when you look at this chart, very impactful here that we should be seeing some sales. We know this past week had a big sale to Mexico. Mexico came in with 1.6 billion bushels, billion, 1.6 million metric tons. And that has, that's, we should be making some sales. We do have a price advantage right now with corn, but we're not getting these export sales yet either. It can start. So something that we do need to see, but, we are behind in these early sales, but pricing versus Brazil, it is much better here moving forward. We are at a price advantage moving into the next 3 months.